It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this sixth day of July, 2023. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times in between and the Great Globe Round, and, well, whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. If you listen to the podcast, we really all would appreciate it tremendously if you would go ahead and subscribe to that podcast, whatever platform you're on, or follow it, or like it, or love it, or feel kindly toward it. There's just so many platforms, it's kind of hard to say how they... You get the idea. And if you'd leave a comment on, you know, on the program, on, you know, on the podcast in itself, it sure would be helpful. And we would, all of us, immensely appreciate it because it helps to grow the program. If, however, you are listening live, as in right now, as in this program is in fact live for the 6th day of July, 2023, then bebop on over to the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, and you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky and Theo and Whitestone. Well, hi, Whitestone. I don't know what's going on. Apparently, Whitestone says that there are problems with the tune-in feed. I don't know. The best place to listen live is always headon.live, but if you are listening over at TuneIn, if you'd hit that little heart button, well, we're trying to get to 1,000 discreet or indiscreet listeners there. I'm not sure where the number stands right now, but... it would be helpful if you did. And, of course, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, as a consequence, of that, we say thank you to our sixth day of the month subscribers via PayPal, and that means thank you. Thank you so very kindly to Kat. Thank you, Kat, jumping in from Ohio. That really does help. That helps tremendously. Thank you to John. And thank you to Joseph. Thank you, Joseph. Excuse me. And thank you to Don in West Tennessee. Thank you to Michael in Chicago, formerly of Madison. The hiccups. Too much gin on the cornflakes this morning. Thanks as well to Stephen, who helped out immensely. Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you all for being part of keeping this program on the air, so I'm sorry. I'll be better in a second. That's a little Foster Brooksy with these hiccups. But anyway, thank you. Thank you so much to Kat. And thanks as well to Stephen. Because, well, we closed the evening yesterday at 600 for the fundraising hall. And so today would be 9. Oh, I'm sorry. Damn hiccups. Every time I use one of those little nicotine pouches, this is the result. But at any rate, thanks to Stephen, and thank you to Kat. The fundraising goal stands at $600. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And if we can raise all or some portion of that, we've got a chance to get caught up from the rather brutal ending of June and go forward into July in a little better shape. Oh, did I do the "Hi, I'm Robin" part? Because I'm definitely Robin, and it's definitely Thorn in the Side Thursday. And Matt in San Francisco's popped into the chat room. Hi, Matt. Hi, Irish Dave. Mighty glad to see you both. And this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, one other thing. I continue to hear from folks because, well, everybody doesn't listen to the podcast, you know, the very day that it goes up. And so I heard from I heard from someone I've never heard from before. That's TJ. TJ said, I just want to introduce myself. I'm Terry in Des Moines. I'm also known as TJ because I'm a junior. I love my dad, Terry Sr. He passed away a while back in 2013. I took care of him for the last 8 years of his life. It was a very emotional time for me. I'll never regret spending time with my dad. I listened to your broadcast on the 5th of July. That's his birthday. Anyhow, I've listened to you for many years, and I'm telling you, I'm so heartbroken over Scott's passing. I really enjoyed your conversations with Scott. You two really made me laugh over and over again. You did a great tribute to him, and I love every one of the Horn members. Thank you so much for sharing. I hope to talk to you someday. I love you. That love goes back, TJ. It goes right back to you, and I hope we will hear from you someday when you decide that you've got something that you want to share with the larger community, the Horn Family Community Congregation as a whole. I was just really glad to hear from you. I've heard from people I've never heard from before. Because there's no footlights here. There's no theater to peer out at. So the only way I ever know you're listening is if I hear from you. And I appreciate the fact that so many of you have taken time to write in and say good words about our dear, dear, dear friend Scott. And TJ said, and this is aimed more at y'all than me, if I get the courage to call sometime, I will. There's so many smart people on your show that I feel stupid compared. Well, don't. What makes the magic happen here is the interaction and the conversation and the interplay and interchange of ideas. And frankly, y'all impress me more than I ever impress you, pretty sure. And you also make me laugh a lot. Start the program with a note from Joey and the crowd. July 4th. I hope everybody had a nice 4th of July, the day we celebrate our country's independence. Of course, that's going to occasion a comment from the little Roo from down under, Joey, too. Our country of Australia has our Independence Day celebration on the 26th of January. In January of 1901, the six colonies became a federation and the Commonwealth of Australia was formed. Since the federation was created, Australia has maintained a stable, liberal, democratic political system and remains a Commonwealth realm. Formerly, going back to 1788, our country was known as the British Colony of New South Wales. Also, please remember that our January is the equivalent of your July, as in the Southern Hemisphere. Summer is from December 21st until March 21st. Thank you, Joey, too. And July 1st was Canoodlia Day, wasn't it? Brother Deacon, didn't you tell me that? Yeah? And Brother Deacon, Asa adds, listening on TuneIn is A-OK, and Ralph's pointed out the same thing. So thanks, y'all, for checking that out. Hopefully it'll work better for Whitestone here presently. Joey continues, personally, I think of two details on the day of July 4th. Number one, being a baseball fan on this day in 1939, that day in 1939, Lou Gehrig gave his farewell speech to a sold-out Yankee Stadium where he spoke into an echoing microphone stating, I am the luckiest man on the face of the earth. And I may have been dealt a bad break, but I have a lot to live for. And just the other evening, Joey continues, I watched the movie about Lou Gehrig, The Pride of the Yankees, where Gary Cooper did an amazing job as Lou Gehrig. And we lost a splendid actor this past week when Alan Arkin passed away. I remember Alan Arkin in several movies, but the one that stuck with me the most was when he played Yossarian in the movie Catch-22 from the classic book that I read in college, one of my favorite novels, I might add. The other event that always comes to mind is the fact that two of our nation's prominent founders both died exactly 50 years to the day, July 4th, 1776. In 1826, both John Adams and Thomas Jefferson died within hours of each other, with Jefferson dying first, leaving an unknowing Adams to state as he neared death that day, as long as my good friend Jefferson lives on. Contrarians of the day suggest that Jefferson had little to do with the construction of the Constitution, as Jefferson was an ambassador visiting Paris during the Constitutional Convention. He was not so much visiting as he was the ambassador. And during the debate on the Bill of Rights in Philadelphia, I'll defer to Robin to sort out that contention. It's absolutely true. I personally think that part of the reason that Thomas Jefferson was ambassador to France was, A, he was a Francophile. They tried sending John Adams over to Paris briefly, and that didn't work out at all because that stuffed shirt. Nobody really liked John Adams. And he was especially odious among the French because he was such a stuck-up sticky beak. And generally was about as much fun as Cato the Elder wandering around Rome saying, Carthago, dolenda est. You know, he answered that to good morning, good evening, hi, how are you? You want to go to the games? Carthago, dolenda est. Till it got to the point that nobody would invite him to Roman orgies or cocktail parties or anything anymore. John Adams was a lot like that. But the other part of it is that I personally suspect that at some point in time, George Washington said, I wonder, or maybe someone besides George Washington, I wonder what we... Okay, let's just put it this way. Thomas Jefferson was in many ways insufferable. He was every bit as insufferable as John Adams, only he was insufferable in a different kind of insufferability. He shuffled around the house. You know, when he eventually did become president, we know from the historical record that he shuffled around the drafty, brand new, more or less brand new White House, which wasn't even white back then. It was probably painted some sort of, you know, sort of beige or eggshell or something like that. But the country was so broke in 1814 after the British troops burned it that, well, they didn't have anything but whitewash, and they got some enslaved people to whitewash the what is now called the White House. If you think about it, White House is not a terribly creative term. But Jefferson shambled around the White House in his dressing gown, bathrobe, and slippers, and spoke in what his contemporaries described as a high, thin, reedy voice. Yeah, I get the notion reading those original sources that he would have made Michael Jackson sound like James Earl Jones. But they didn't want him around in Philadelphia mucking up the convention, because James Madison and Alexander Hamilton knew exactly what they were doing. They were trashing the Articles of Confederation. The Articles of Confederation said that you couldn't amend the Articles of Confederation without unanimous assent. And Jefferson or Madison writes about the fact that, well, they knew what they were doing. They were getting rid of the Articles of Confederation, because under the Articles of Confederation, there were states and commonwealths where democracy was breaking out all over, and that could be very, very bad for those rich white men in their powdered wigs and their lace breeches and their buckled high heel shoes. It was dangerous to the money. So that's my digression on, yes, they did not want Jefferson running his mouth and being insufferable in the Constitutional Convention. He'd already been in Philadelphia during one hot summer in 1776, and everybody else knew that, yeah, that was enough. On the other hand, Joey writes, our current-day contrarian, Steve in New York, tried to take a cowbell away from a 14-year-old baby giraffe on the front porch last Friday. Really, Steve, you wanted to erase the cowbell awarded to Little Junior? That's really cruel, Steve. It's like taking the baseball from a kid who caught a foul ball at a baseball game. Kid's 14 years old. 14-year-olds only care about things like fat jokes and fart jokes. They're not skilled comedians. That was really cruel, Steve. Leave Junior alone. Oh, and there's Junior. Yeah, here's one for you. What do you call a weight-challenged, recently gender-converted person? You call them a trans fat. Junior may be laughing hilariously hysterically at his terrible joke. I, for one, am not. Junior will be going to the woodshed. Oh, Junior, we don't talk like that. Shame on you, Junior. You apologize to all our transgender friends. Where do you get these ideas?
I get it all from Joey. He's the one that gives me all these ideas. Hey, you want to hear another one?
No.
No. This guy named Householder won't be holding the house hostage in Ohio anymore, because this man who looks like the side of a house is going to the big house.
Okay, Junior, you make a good point, but that's enough. Now go watch the fireworks.
Junior is correct. The smug, arrogant man in the Ohio Assembly who thought he could buy his way to the speaker position by confiscating $61 million in bribes from First Energy Corporation in exchange for legislation that would bail out First Energy's dilapidated nuclear plants was sentenced to 20 years this past week. Ex-Ohio Speaker Larry Householder will spend a good portion of the next 20 years in prison. However, because he's a white man, he probably will not be going to the big house, but probably will only serve a portion of the sentence in a low-maximum facility, low-max facility that is more like a Club Med rather than an actual jail. Personally, had an interest in this case because I knew and worked for the former CEO of First Energy, Chuck Jones, not the director of Warner Brothers cartoons, I will add editorially, who appears to have been well aware of the fact that nearly $1.3 billion had been funneled to political figures in the state to make sure First Energy Corp was bailed out. I am truly amazed that Chuck Jones is just walking away from the matter without any accountability. Well, Joey continues, whether Jefferson is responsible for the construction of the Constitution or not, he isn't. John Adams shaped the Constitution with extensive influence from Benjamin Rush. It was mostly Madison and Hamilton, a little bit of John Jay. Those are the three people who wrote the Federalist Papers. Now, we know that Jefferson and Adams had a love-hate relationship, but by the end of their lives became great friends. They had been great friends, then they broke up, then they became frenzies again. They were two different people, as Adams was a Federalist, just like George Washington. Adams believed that the country needed a strong central government. Adams detested slavery, whereas Jefferson was all for states' rights. States' rights! States' rights! Yeah, states' rights! High, thin, reedy voice. States' rights! And slavery. Later in life, after reading many of Adams' correspondences, Jefferson was believed to be against slavery. Oh, no, Junior heard that.
Yeah, sure, he was against slavery at the end of his life after all those years of literally using, abusing, and figuring, and literally fucking the slaves over. How convenient.
Yeah, well, normally I would find those remarks inappropriate, but after all, we African-Americans have been through and all we've been through, and considering you were just watching the fireworks, I find your incendiary remarks acceptable. John Adams and Benjamin Rush worked together to fashion the Constitution. However, they had very different perspectives on the future of the country. Adams believed once the Constitution was written and invoked that the independence of the country would be settled and the strife would be over. Benjamin Rush believed that the strife was just beginning in this country because of slavery in the South, states' rights, and the lack of women's rights. Rush believed the real revolution was just brewing and about to surface in the near future, and wow, was he right. Rush believed that the furtherance of this union was incumbent upon the freedom of personal rights of every man, woman, child, and giraffe within its confines.
Well, good job, Giraffrey and Junior and Joey, too. I'd just like to leave you with one little interesting tidbit, and that would be the name of Benjamin Rush's wife. Yes, Benjamin Rush's wife's name was Julie Stockton, or in today's dollar, she would be known as Julie Stockton Rush. Gee, where have we heard the name Stockton Rush recently? Oh, yeah, the libertarian death thermos. In light of everything that has happened in the past year with the Supreme Court taking away women's rights, with the abolishing of Roe v. Wade, and just recently revoking affirmative rights, affirmative action rights, Benjamin Rush was incredibly prescient concerning the future of this country. It's just a damn shame he couldn't have conveyed the message to his future distant relative to stay the fuck away from homemade model submarines. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, July the 6th, 2023, with Giraffrey still getting a rush watching Junior lighting his own fireworks. Don't set the country on fire, Junior. It's dry out there. And so there's a $50 rush challenge. Rush! It's a rush challenge on the table. Thank you. P.S. Joey says, I had a laugh on July 4th as I decided to mow my lawn late in the while the fireworks were going off all over the neighborhood as the sun was setting and a full moon was rising. I was listening to my iPod, which just plays random songs that I downloaded. The last song that I played as I was finishing up my mowing detail was none other than the song Firework by our wonderful liberal friend, Katy Perry. You go, girl. I think if we ever get another cat, I'm going to name it Katy Perry. I'm sure I will not be the first. Let's see. Emilio says, Cartago delenda est. You want fries with that? Loosely translated, Kim in New York. Hi, Robin. Shock about Scott. I've been out of the loop this week and just tuned in 5 minutes ago when I heard you reading an email about Scott's death. I'm sitting here in shock and on the brink of tears. Let them flow, Kim. Let them flow. A lot of them have. Scott was such a funny, smart, generous, and kind soul. I loved his talks with you that were so interesting, often hysterical, and very broad in scope. I guess I'm going to need to listen to yesterday's podcast to find out what happened and how you found out about his passing. I do enjoy your other callers so much, but Scott was a true dear heart, and your program will not be the same without him. With sadness and love, Kim in New York City. I know. There's a hole. There's a hole in my life and our collective lives in his absence. I just so you know, Kim, I found out about it live on air because Brother Deacon Asa said, hey, you know, he monitors and makes sure that the stream goes out streamingly happy. And he just said, hey, I'm worried about Scott. And I said, yeah. And I went and scrolled down the page. It took a bit of scrolling because of so many people wishing him happy birthday that he never saw. But it took me a minute to read those. And I knew what was coming when I read the words from his niece, and it is with the greatest sadness that I announce, oh no. It was pretty awful. It was really awful, Kim. But that's on the July 4th broadcast, and we memorialize Scott rather well in yesterday's program. And in fact, Tamara, who is in San Diego there, subject, well, damn. Just catching up on the podcast and your beautiful on-the-fly tribute to our buddy Scott. I had a bad feeling, but fuck. Smiling and crying at the same time as you conjure up Punky and chirps. So happy Scott found his people here. I hope his family knows how much he was loved. And bless Jude for her comforting spirit. I'll check in again soon. Tamara. Thank you, Tamara. Cat in Ohio. My heart is broken about Scott. Always enjoyed his conversations. Always the good ones leave and we're stuck with the bad ones, i.e. Trump and Thomas and Alito and so forth. Gonna kick in $200 in his memory. Kay. Hi, Kay. Just catching up on the podcast. I just heard the news of Scott's passing. I don't interact as much as I used to, but I still listen on a pretty regular basis, and this feels like a long-distance family to me, if that makes sense. And so Scott being gone leaves a hole. I know, Kay. I know. Ken in Northwest PA, as to Jefferson's thin, reedy voice, think RFK Jr. or Susan Collins. It was a high, thin, reedy voice, if I recall correctly. And both of those people have deeper voices than Thomas Jefferson probably had. Especially Susan Collins! Shame on me. And Lee says hi to TJ. I hope TJ will feel more comfortable contacting the horn. I sometimes make less than insightful comments. Occasionally I stop myself before hitting send. Why? Why? Why, Lee? Everything counts here. Lee offers an obligatory Star Trek joke for Junior. Bad joke for Junior to laugh at. How does Robin get around the Star Trek universe? Transporter. Ah! Oh, the llama is weary, I tell you. Weary. She may not even make it up the hill. Steve chiming in New York. Yes, but the executive mansion in Argentina is the pink house, and the executive mansion in South Korea is the blue house. Of course, the executive mansion in the United Kingdom is called number 10. True. I wish we... Well, we couldn't have the pink house because then the John Mellencamp might have rights to sue or something. But then again, the Biden administration, for 2 years running, has lit up the White House in pride colors, so... I thought the White House looked rather nice that way. Didn't you? And Steve adds in regard to Scott, in the back of my mind, I keep hearing these words. Hold on a minute while I drink my first sip of coffee for the day. Yes. Marinoff Premium, was it? Marinoff Special Reserve? That needs to be a thing that happens. So, the community seems to be in order and of as good spirit as we can hope. And that's a good thing because, it really is a thorn in the side Thursday. It just, oh dear. First and foremost... And in no particular order, but this latest Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis ad that tries to paint Nitwit Nero as some sort of coddler of the LGBTQ community. I mean, I know, and I've remarked upon it in the past. You know, there are log closet Republicans who presumably like Trump. And I've even seen some self-hating trans people who are big fans of Donald Trump. I can't sort it out, but all I can say is what I always say in this instance, that every marginalized group has its lickspittles. Think Caitlyn Jenner. Who, by the way, has finally had enough of Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis. Imagine that. The check from the Trump campaign probably cleared. My best guess. But this ad, and it's largely, it's visual, but it's also a montage of Nitwit Nero saying things about being approving of LGBTQ people, trans people. You know, when he owned Miss Universe, he allowed trans women to compete. And so, I guess Monkey Up thinks this is a winning strategy for him. For me, the ad, if you haven't seen it, you'll at least hear the audio in a minute. It's just so clangingly off-key. And we know from the 2022 election campaign that those issues mattered to less than 2% of people who were voting in 2022, and that's why we didn't get it. That's why there was no red wave. That was, you know, just more of a spotting event. And then, of course, Monkey Up went on a show run by White Power Barbie, you know, Tommy Lauren. It's called Tommy Lauren is Fearless. I think Feckless is more like it. Tommy Lauren is Brainless. Really. White Power Barbie. And it's so bizarre that it made its way into conversation over at My Filthy Morning Habit with the Morning Joe Zoo crew. Joe and Mika, of course, have the holiday week off. It's so nice not to have to work and still get to be a millionaire. Is that a little economic envy on my part? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it is. Oh, well. But the panel included Willie Geist and noted branding expert Donnie Deutsch, who I get a kick out of it when he's on the program. But just to check in with it, their take on it was pretty spot on.
Donald Trump yesterday, speaking of Ron DeSantis, said the campaign for Governor DeSantis is in, quote, total disarray. Trump made the comments on social media, writing in part, quote, Ron DeSanctimonious is getting absolutely demolished. No crowds, no enthusiasm, no interest. He's hurting himself very badly for 2028, wrote Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Governor DeSantis is defending a controversial and frankly bizarre campaign video that attacks former President Donald Trump's views on LGBTQ rights. The video features past tweets and comments by Trump and the recent legislation DeSantis has signed in the state of Florida.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
If Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
That is correct.
In the future, can transgender women compete in Miss Universe?
Yes.
Make America great again.
Donnie Deutsch, man extraordinaire. Yeah. What am I looking at
ad
there?
Man extraordinaire is stumped. Okay, I've been doing this for a long time.
What are we doing here?
And the answer is, well, first of all, DeSantis is flailing, and he's trying to continually move to the right of Trump. But this LGBTQ thing is just, do you think this is moving voters? Are you, and to pay Trump as a patron of this group is, you know. As an ad guy, there's one thing I learned over the years is people aren't stupid. Okay, you just I don't know the voter that's going
to
see that.
Took him years to figure that out. Apparently,
you know what, Trump, I'm gone. DeSantis, you're my guy. And DeSantis is such a dark, dark, dark character. I've talked a lot about on the show how at the end of the day, a candidate, Trump, even though, you know, we eviscerate him, and there is a likability if you're a Trump guy about him. He's entertaining. He's a lounge act. He's this and that. This guy is just dark, the Prince of Darkness. And that is one of the darkest, most bizarre, twisted, deviant ads I've ever seen.
Well, he was defending it yesterday. Bipartisan backlash to the video, by the way. Many people calling it homophobic. Governor DeSantis standing by the ad, calling it fair game.
I think, you know, identifying Donald Trump as really being a pioneer in injecting gender ideology into the mainstream, where he was having men compete against women in his beauty pageants, I think that's totally fair game,
because
he's
now
campaigning saying the opposite, that he doesn't think that you should have men competing in women's things like athletics. And so we've been very clear on it, that we believe in.
I know I don't have to say it, but there are no men competing in women's athletics. It's apparently too difficult a concept for a Harvard-educated graduate in history like Monkey Up to understand, but it remains a fact, and there were no men competing in Miss Universe. It's just such a weird ad that I'm gonna check in with Matt in San Francisco and just ask a question. If you've seen it, Matt, did it set off anything? Because my gaydar's not great. But for a guy who goes around wearing white go-go boots, there's something a little closety about the ad. Let's just put it that way. And you know, and this is, I think, one of the more important aspects, there's no way Ron Monkey Up DeSantis came up with this. One of his campaign creeps did, which means that there's probably some latency running around the Monkey Up campaign, probably about as thick as the crust of the earth. But I'm just guessing here, and I will, in fact, defer to the Horns official, Den Mother, Steve in New York, Monkey Up. I'm so homophobic, I'm going to bookend my homophobic ad with sweaty, contorted muscle men. I know. Who were those buff beefcakes? Yeah. But yeah. Donnie Deutsch made some compelling points, but the real countersinking of the nail was yet to come.
Protecting the rights of our girls and the rights of women athletes to be able to participate with fairness and with integrity.
In response to those remarks, Trump campaign spokesperson said, quote, a desperate DeSantis campaign with a flailing candidate is in its last throes of relevancy. Mara, it's been said many times in the last several months of Governor DeSantis that he's just playing very, very small ball, and that he's picking on these issues. He's trying to win a national election right now, and he's going after regressive things and leaning into his anti-woke agenda. I'm sure that works with a small group of supporters and a lot of people in this country that may resonate with, but you're trying to broaden the coalition. You're not just supposed to preach to the choir to win a national election.
I mean, it's like he went to finishing school at the Heritage Foundation or something.
Ow.
I mean, I don't know who he thinks this is resonating with. It's not. I also just have to say, in the ad itself, a couple people have said this, it is kind of homoerotic. I mean, there's something about the ad that's a little bit, you know.
Something. The beefcake guys. Something. That's Mara Gay from the New York Times, by the way.
Odd to begin with. And then, of course, broadening that out, though, it is, I really feel strongly that, you know, men who are secure in their own.
Ouch, this is going to sting. We've had this discussion in the past about, you know, if Trump throws ketchup at the walls, what does Monkey Up throw? And I think we're all, I think we reached consensus that it's probably mayonnaise. But this will have some condiment flinging. I said condiment.
And the ad itself, a couple people have said this, it is kind of homoerotic. I mean, there's something about the ad that's a little bit, you know, odd to begin with. And then, of course, broadening that out, though, is I really feel strongly that, you know, men who are secure in their own masculinity don't feel the need to shout about it from the rooftops everywhere they go.
Did Mara Gay just call Ron Monkey up DeClantis a shrimp dick? She did everything but say that he has SDE. You know who I think's probably responsible for this ad, by the way? His wife. She's the brains of the outfit.
And denigrate others. It's small-minded. It makes him look small. And it's embarrassing. So, I mean, sometimes when you see open hate like that, the best thing that you can do is condemn it, but also, you know, knock it down a few pegs. And this is just really silly. I mean, I can't imagine what Americans are going to see this and have this change their mind. It might motivate Democratic voters to start paying attention. And I think if that's what he succeeded in, that may be what we're looking at.
I'm smiling because I remember what a gay friend of mine saying, was that an anti-gay ad? I saw a lot of Brad Pitt looking hot and yeah. shirtless dudes.
There was a gladiator.
Flexing. Yeah, there's a gladiator.
I know, he was free.
I still, Donnie, if Donnie doesn't get it, nobody gets it in an ad.
Oh, my God. Some mornings it's just kind of silly, but that one wasn't. That was spot on. They pulled up only centimeters short. Oh, dear. Poor choice of words. Of saying that Monkey Up is a closet case. Matt in San Francisco, thank you for answering the Matt signal. Ooh. Ron DeSanctimonious, if Ron ain't gay, someone on his staff definitely is. I wouldn't be surprised if a circle jerk is in their future. I'm wounded. And it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, so, well, I mean, that's as good a place to start as any. But there's other places too. So, just a reminder, we're moving in on the 45 minutes into this Thorn in the Side Thursday. There's a $50 Rush challenge. Not that Rush. He's busy with pineapples. There's a $50 Rush challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe and Junior and Jai T the Kangaroo. I mean, I love y'all, but I think. It's not nice to say you have a favorite, but I'm terribly fond of Joey, too. But that challenge is on the table, and that'll get us down to $500 to go to come up even and be actually caught up with the last month's fundraising and okay up to today. So don't let the challenge go by, please. The ad, Steve in New York, says, I understand what everyone's saying, but I honestly can't figure out who this is supposed to appeal to. It actually makes me wonder if someone is punking Monkey Up. Did he do the I'm Ron DeSantis and I approve this message election requirement? I don't know. But he defended the ad, Steve. He defended it to White Power Barbie. Lee in New York, cowbell, I do not usually suggest this for Morning Joe comments. The reference to DeSantis as coming up short is worthy, in my opinion. I agree. Thank you to Ralphs jumping in on the Rush Challenge. There's $40 to go on that now. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Ron's staff, Matt in San Francisco, says, I suggest the ad was made by the staffer whose office smells like poppers. I didn't know it had a lingering aroma. But then again, it was, wasn't it first marketed as something called locker room? Or that was that just a colloquial term for it? Amyl nitrate, isn't it? I wouldn't know. Yes, I would. I'm not going to lie. We tried everything in high school and college, or almost everything. It was also called, curiously enough, because of the challenge on the table, it was also called Rush, because it induced an immediate head rush that, you know, oh, wow. Anyway, we do have other places to go, and they are bizarre and thorny. Marianne Williamson, wait, the ad, Steve says, I figured it out. Someone had too much Kentucky jelly on their toast. I don't know why people like that stuff so much. I don't think it's got much flavor at all. Of course, they got that. They do got some taste like you know, strawberry and stuff, but Kentucky jelly. Oh, here. There you go, Steve. You earned it. Marianne Williamson, who is running for president again some more. All of these campaigns are in one way or another stealth or not quite so stealth Trump campaigns. Whether it's Bobby Kennedy Jr., who, by the way, bum me out, has announced that Dennis Kucinich, who ran for president in 2004, whom I supported and voted for in the primary, Dennis Kucinich will be Bobby Jr.'s campaign manager. I don't know if he gets to keep his gig at Fox News or not, but, you know, guy's got to get paid. And Bobby will have money. And it won't even be Kennedy money. Bobby will have MAGA money, Steve Bannon money, that kind of money. And it spends real good. But Marianne Williamson, her entire South Carolina staff just quit. And then the campaign fired two of its national field directors and canned a member of Marianne's New Hampshire team. They've announced that the new campaign manager, Carlos Cardona, is restructuring the campaign to be cash efficient, but also incredibly nimble on the ground in key primary states, according to the report in Politico. That's not how some people see it, though. They're saying that her staff confronted Marianne and said they were concerned that too much attention was being placed on social media and not enough on getting Williamson's name on the ballot beyond New Hampshire and South Carolina. Each state has their own laws and requirements, and typically expert consultants are hired to handle the specifics to get a candidate on the ballot. During that meeting, there was just a vibe that she felt attacked, and an insinuation at the end of that call that some staff were not going to make it to the end of the week. The article goes on to say, quote a staffer saying, she didn't listen to anything that was said, clearly because the people who expressed frustration were fired. Of course not. Why would she listen to anything that's said? She's a narcissist. She's an egomaniac. She's a narcissist and an egomaniac who is otherwise surrounded by a cloud of patchouli and sparkles. She is, at this point, the queen of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol, which we will see in action, and it does include Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We'll see it in action as the year progresses and we move into 2024. Okay, Lee, that's funny. Marianne Williamson, Lee in New York. She had campaign staff? Who knew? Yeah, I thought she was just channeling her campaign staff, or I don't know, visualizing them.
Meanwhile, over on the other side of the aisle, over in Maggot Land, Representative Andy Harris, a Republican from Maryland, has told Politico that he understands that marginal trailer queen has been drummed out of the Feedum carcass. They had a secret vote. How democratic of them. How anti-democratic of them. They had a secret vote and declared that marginal trailer queen will no longer be able to play in the Feedum carcass's reindeer games. I mean, seems kind of fair weather friends, but the bottom line is she's been sucking up to Kevers McCarthy because he recognizes her as a money machine and she recognizes that he is the path to the power for which she lusts. Not much room in her brain for anything but that, if you get right down to it. But they drummed her out of the Feedum carcass even after she announced, you know, her support for the cue ball conspiracy. Even after she said that the Rothschild family, Rothschild is a Rothschild, is a dog whistle for Jews, said they funded the space lasers that burned up California a couple of years ago. I never said Jewish space lasers, she will often note. And of course, she and Clanny Granny, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, had a seventh grade slap fight on the floor of the house within the last couple of weeks. But nonetheless, she's still more or less doing Feedum carcass bidding because she's out there barking and grunting about impeach Joe Biden. Oh, dear God. But the ridicule has been swift. Andy Harris previously mentioned, noting that it was an appropriate action to throw her out of the Feedum carcass. I mean, you don't get to call Clanny Granny a little bitch and just get away with it. And so over on Twitter, the response was fast and furious. Getting kicked out of the Feedum carcass for lack of decorum is like getting kicked out of the crack house for having too much crack. Well done, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Well done. Looks like we're reaching revolution eating its own stage, said Susan Glasser of the New York Times. Yeah, a member of the leopards eating your face party is surprised to find a leopard eating her face. Representative Richie Torres, a New York Democrat, said Marjorie Taylor Greene has been removed from the House Freedom Caucus. What does it say about the GOP that the MTG is no longer right-wing enough for the right wing of the Republican Party? Then Wahajat Ali said, imagine being not extreme enough for the Feedum carcass. This is where the GOP is now. Sorry, MT Green. You're a rhino now. Then the chief White House correspondent for the New York Times, Peter Baker, said, Jewish space lasers were evidently okay, but calling Lauren Boebert names was the straw that broke the camel's back and prompted the Feedum carcass to oust marginal trailer queen, Congressman tells Jordan... Yeah. Then this, and this is true, a comedian by the name of Gabe Sanchez noting, Marjorie Taylor Greene has officially been expelled from the Feedum carcass. If your own fascists hate you, then you know, you're the problem. And a Democratic activist by the name of Victor Shee said, Marjorie Taylor Greene has just been removed from the Feedum carcass after an internal vote because she wasn't extreme enough for them. You can't make this up. The Republican Party is in so much disarray right now, and it's an absolute embarrassment. No, it isn't. It's an absolute delight. I'm here for all of this entire Lord of the Flies cosplay. Okay, Ken. Subject, Sporkfoot. Smells like wrestling and bullshit. Sorry about dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and if you're just setting the table in the Central Daylight Time Zone, I'm sorry there, too. And this is interesting. Via Huffington Post. Thank you, Ralphs. Cillian Murphy and the team behind the hit period crime drama slammed the DeClantis campaign over an ad. We're talking about Peaky Blinders. The team behind the hit British period crime drama on Wednesday slammed the Florida Republican governor's campaign team for sharing on Twitter a widely criticized anti-LGBTQ video that featured images of actor Cillian Murphy as the gangster Tommy Shelby in the series. They stole it. The footage from the show was obtained without permission or official license, said a statement signed by Murphy, screenwriter Stephen Knight, Karen Mandebach Productions, Tiger Aspect Productions, and Banna J. Rights. So you can add thief to monkey up DeClantis' resume. The Peaky Blinders team went on to say, "We do not support nor endorse the video's narrative and strongly disapprove of the use of the content in this manner." And the way they introduced it, the Monkey Up campaign, and we're going to run through it again, was to say, to wrap up, quote, Pride Month, unquote, dick fingers, you hear them? Let's hear from the politician who did more than any other Republican to celebrate it. I'm not sure he did more than any other Republican. But just the same. We will give it a listen. Here we go.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
But Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
Is that my favorite part of that is that whoever this person asking the question is on the Today Show properly genders Caitlyn Jenner. And we know Trump's answer. Of course she's going to use the women's room. She qualifies. And let me just digress here for a moment. Because I've been thinking about things. I do that sometimes. You know, Monkey Up is being sued, of course, over his bathroom ban. And there's actually an interesting constitutional question that comes up with something like this, and I will use myself as the example. Let's say that I wanted to fly somewhere, and I had to change planes in somewhere in Florida. Now, the unconstitutional, violative of both equal protection and due process law that Monkey Up, his pet legislature, passed and he signed into law, says that if a trans person is in the potty in a public facility, like an airport, that if some fart, that is a feminism appropriating reactionary transphobe, in this case a woman, is also in the restroom, or a man in the men's, and it's a trans man, but we're talking about me here, and goes, "Eek! Get out, you horrible tranny!" Well, 9 times out of 10, they won't be speaking to a trans person, but they will be trying to enforce the patriarchal view of femininity against a non-feminine presenting cis woman. But let's say for a moment that it's me. And I'll add that I never go to the restroom anywhere in public, that I don't take my ID with me. And there's a reason behind that. I've seen video of cops barging in to women's restrooms demanding to see someone's ID, and when she didn't have it, forcing her to leave. She was standing in line, and she was a cis girl, forcing her to get out of the line and go away. I think that happened in Vegas. Nonetheless, if that happens, and it would begin a long and tortured legal process, but we have talked on this program in the past, and I bet you Steve in New York knows where I'm about to go, because this is one of those things that just makes, this is one of those wrongnesses that makes Steve eat dirt and run rabbits. When politicians, including the President of the United States himself, talks about, you know, when, during the debt ceiling crisis, said we have to pass a debt ceiling extension to protect the full faith and credit of the United States of America. And what that refers to, erroneously, is the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution. Which has nothing to do with the public debt. It has to do with how states must respect the legal decisions, the binding laws of the several states. In talking about it in the past, I've noted that, for instance, and if I recall correctly, the original constitutional case on this came out of Massachusetts not long after the arrival of the horseless carriage. Maybe it was Ohio. I don't know. But what it had to do with was a driver with an operator's license from state A driving in state B, and state B saying, "Well, it don't matter. You don't have a right to do that in our state." I just do the redneck accent because it seems, it feels right. And so eventually you get a holding that says, nope, your Massachusetts driver's license is good in any other state in the union. And this may have even happened before, say, Arizona joined the union. What was that, 1912? And the reason for that is because the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution says that the states are constitutionally bound to do just that, respect things like driver's licenses from other states. Imagine having to get an ID in every state to which you traveled. It would be madness. So within my hyperpothetical here, I'm in the ladies' room in an airport in Florida, and I'm going to catch a plane to, oh, I don't know, somewhere in the southern hemisphere. Maybe Brazil. And so the fart, the feminism appropriating reactionary transphobe, says, "Get out of the women's room!" Well, under the law of the state of Florida that's been passed and is in effect, if I refuse, the fart can go and complain to a cop, and the cop can come and arrest my ass and the rest of me. There's only one problem. I have my ID with me. And by sex, it says F, female. That is an official determination of the state of West Virginia that I am a woman. And that I am, by extension, in the right place. So when Officer Transphobe roughs me and cuffs me and drags me away, we have a constitutional crisis. And I think this has transferability. Didn't mean to do that, but it works. I think this has transferability for other issues. Because if the several states under states' rights can start refusing to recognize the determination of their sister states, then it's almost like remember, I invented this term too, constructive secession. Because it is because that state is saying that they, by God, will not abide by the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution, which they are bound so to do. So they are saying that they wish no longer to be associated or part of the constitutional structure of this country. That's why all this anti-migrant stuff, all this anti-migrant hate, the fact that a major United States Hispanic organization, Hispanic rights organization, has issued a travel, not advisory, but a travel warning saying, for the love of God, stay out of Florida. That's why the NAACP has said to the African American population and people of color in this country, for the love of God, stay out of Florida. That's why the Human Rights Campaign, the largest anti-LGBTQ, or the largest, I'm sorry, the largest LGBTQ plus advocacy organization in the United States, has also issued a travel warning to the LGBTQ plus community saying, for the love of God, stay out of Florida. But some people don't have the luxury of being able to do that, and some people actually live there. As Scary Jerry has not just alluded, but stated as fact, well, they're having a hard time getting shit built in Florida now, because Florida Republicans said, We want all you brown Spanish speaking people to get the fuck out of our white Florida. And they are being obliged. And so in the hypothetical that I'm putting forward, I guess they would take me away and jail me. Probably put me in a men's jail, despite how I am, and then legal organizations would come to my aid, a federal lawsuit would be filed, the state of Florida would answer the lawsuit saying, fuck all that, we hate them. We can do whatever we want to them. Cause our governor is the God of Florida. And in a previous United States that was not in fact ruled by our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties, it would be a no-brainer. The district court would rule in my favor. The state of Florida would appeal it to the 11th Circuit. Even the 11th Circuit would rule in my favor. Because it's open and shut, slam dunk. The state of West Virginia has to respect Florida driver's licenses and the data thereon, just as Florida must respect a driver's license from the state of West Virginia and the data and determinations thereon. A driver's license is the most common form of identification in the United States. And within my hypothetical, by the time I was flying, I would have my passport with me, which will also say F, female. And then it would go up to the Supreme Court of the United States, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties. And that's where the funhouse stuff begins. I'm sure the Alliance Defaming Freedom would be there. And every other barking and grunting maggot attorney general in the United States, probably including the attorney general of the state of West Virginia, pill-pushing Patty Morrissey, who would argue, no, it's okay, we hate the trans too. If Florida don't want to respect West Virginia's trans, that's fine with us. We don't like them. I don't know why we done that for her. I mean, him. What? It. But in the past, what would have happened after that is I would win the Supreme Court. And I would probably get damages as well, and then we wouldn't have to fundraise to keep this program on the air anymore. But when I say that nothing is as it once was, with the Supreme Court, that's what I mean. Things that were so normative that you could say that something would, I mean, frankly, the Supreme Court shouldn't even hear that case in my hypothetical at all. They should refuse to grant certiorari when the state of Florida appealed, because it's black letter law. But even black letter law is not safe in the United States anymore. And unless and until, and Goddess of Irony, it would be great if you would take note of this. Pretty please. Unless and until people like, oh, Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, old Balls and Strikes, shuffle off this mortal coil and create space for President Biden to appoint 3 new justices. Everything is at hazard. And no, there are no open and shut cases. There are no slam dunks. There is no black letter law. That is the breadth and depth and width of the judicial crisis this country is in as a result of those crooks. Sammy Bad Breath, Fappy Thomas, The Handmaid, Anne's Boy Neil, have created by their cupidity. And it's a hell of a note. Randy Radar, I don't know what you mean. I haven't heard anything else from anybody else. Let me hop over and have a quick peek in the chat room. Randy Radar says that the website sounds strange. Irish Dave asking, but Robin, would the Florida cops stop and frisk y'all? Down there, the cops can do pretty much anything the cops want to do, Dave. Because That's how fascism rolls. But back to the stupid monkey op-ed. And the question about Caitlyn Jenner going potty. And to think that came from the Today Show. Candidate on North Carolina bathroom law.
That's correct.
In the future, can transgender women compete in Miss Universe?
Yeah.
And that was Baba Wawa.
Make America great again.
Psych!
Yeah, and that's when the weird homoeroticism starts, and it begins with a guy yelling, psych! And a visual of Ron Monkey up DeClantis shooting laser beams out his eyeballs, trying to get Bogart the Dark Brandon meme. Yep, Brad Pitt from Troy. God, he was cute in that skirt. Nice legs. And once again, the chat, the image of the guy that, and he's all ripply and muscly and broad-shouldered with a totally manicured, see, beard that's used as the model example of a Chad.
I cannot.
And a guy smoking a cigarette.
Think of anything more horrifying.
It really has shut down drag.
Just produced some of the harshest, most draconian laws that literally threaten.
And that, yeah.
In trans existence.
Congratulations, Ron DeSantis. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, that's Cenk Uygur.
You win.
Thanks, Cenk. Helicopters. More beefcake. And it's just so bizarre. So bizarre. Thank you, Lee. Headon.live sounds fine to me. Thank you. Ralph says, sometimes the stream gets funky, so I reload the stream. Darlene in Connecticut says she can't get through to the stress line. Maybe it's been ringing and I just didn't see it. I don't know. Calls keep failing. Try again. And I'll be watching. Thanks, Darlene. And with regard to the ad, Steve in New York says, don't forget the two appearances of Christian Bale from American Psycho. That's who that was. Okay. Yeah, sure, yeah. It's just weird. But a moment, also. And I try, as I've said, for instance, when Steve from New York offers up his critiques of a particular radio show, or when in the past others have critiqued the smartest man on the smartest man in progressive broadcasting, who once said Phil Schlafly is a national treasure. Well, we've got a new, and I hate it when it's our side and I have to point this out. Cenk Uygur is now defending himself and Anna Kasparian for some wildly transphobic ideas, for lack of a better term, on their show. It was really gross. And remember, you know, Cenk started out as a Republican. And he's had his issues in the past. You know, he was on the inside of starting a grift back in, what was it, 16? Called Wolf Pack. Remember that? We talked about it a bit back then. That was the grift that was going to run more progressive Democrats against against Democrats. And they came in here and mucked about a little bit in the Senate primary in 2018. It was, I think, yes. And all it was a post office box somewhere in Southern California. And as one of the founders of Wolfpack, Cenk eventually had to step away because it turned out that he'd written a lot of misogynistic garbage, and it came to light. And so it is that Cenk and Anna Kasparian decided to go off on life-saving, gender-affirming care for trans youth. Not trans children, trans youth. Adolescents. Aaron in the Morn, Aaron Reed, who is probably the single best source for following these issues over on Twitter, asked him straight out with a tweet, "Cenk, stop beating around the bush. Do you actually disagree with Anna Kasparian or not? Do trans youth deserve access to gender-affirming medical care?" Because Anna Kasparian had said, no, by God, they don't. They need to just go ahead and unalive themselves. Well, I mean, she didn't say they need to unalive themselves. It's just that her position leads to these kids, these youth, these adolescents, unaliving themselves. Aaron said, "Do you believe 29 major medical organizations are engaged in a conspiracy over that care?" Because they kind of said that too. "How do you feel about state bans on care?" And, I mean, she gave him both barrels. "You act as if you're being silenced, but the reality is you're not engaging and you're platforming someone spreading harmful misinformation about trans people in a time where we have 530 bills targeting us. You're sharing the screen with someone who looks at the landscape around trans issues and decides to eat right-wing propaganda, regurgitate Jesse Singal, and targets trans people alongside those passing these bills." And so, you know, Anna Kasparian has outed herself as a transphobe. And it's, she retweeted, just so we know, she retweeted a guy who calls himself Destiny. Destiny got banned from the Twitch platform when he said that fascists should, and this is a quote, "mow down Black Lives Matter protesters with bullets." Yeah, she retweeted Destiny saying, "Hot take, the civil rights movement owes its success to being mostly peaceful. Anna was 100% right. Everyone pretend," she's a white girl, by the way. "Everyone pretending now that it was some crazy violent uprising that was scaring the white men into agreeing to is an idiot who's read less MLK than anyone they're criticizing." So, I've seen where some people are surprised that the Young Turks have taken this position. I was not one of those people. Not at all. Emilio noting that Head On sounds fine at headon.live. Darlene, the last call I had come in was last night, so I am going to reboot the phone. Oh, I don't want to do that. Sorry. There we go. I'm rebooting, and hopefully things will get better, Darlene. A note from Billable Rick. Scotty's passing. I've been on vacation the last couple of days and just heard about Scott's passing. I was so saddened to hear that terrible news. I'll never forget the impromptu horn side porch that we had in San Diego 4 summers ago before the Padres-Cubs game with Scott, Joey, and me outside the Outback Steakhouse in San Diego. That gathering was so much fun. As an added bonus, Tamara stopped by just before the end of the program. We conjured her. It's hard to believe that Scotty is no longer with us to help all of us regroove. There's another one. You need a regrooving, Robin. To improve the quality of our vinyl, but we shall all have to persevere in his absence. It was an honor and privilege to have met and known Scotty and heard his many unique conversations with you on the program. May Scotty's memory be a blessing to everyone who knew him and those who only vicariously knew him through this program. Thank you, Billable. You were one of the lucky ones. I would have loved to have just sat around her, me with my decaf and Scott with his instant coffee and chatted away. You got to meet Scott. And you were fortunate in that regard. Thank you for your note. Darlene, if you try again, here, let me do something. Let's try. Okay, so hold on. I'm going to try dialing it from my phone. Nope, rings right through. So I don't know what's going on, Darlene. If you wanna try again, please feel free to jump in. I'd love to hear from you. Let me do this too. I tried the toll free line. So I know that's working. Oh, where else? What else? Because there's plenty. Nitwit Nero has a new, he kind of has a new lawyer. Oh, and by the way, we are halfway through the program, and we need to raise $40 more to meet Joey's rush challenge. Ha! Huh? Thank you, Joey, and hopefully that will happen. Nitwit Nero promised to defend Walt Nauta, and after delaying in getting a lawyer in order to delay the prosecution itself. Walt Nauta, Nitwit Nero's indicted co-conspirator and body man, one wonders what that actually means, was finally arraigned today because he found a pettifogger the pettifogger he found is a former public defender. That's, I'm not laughing. Public defenders usually go on to do criminal defense because, well, they're good at it. The lawyer is named Sasha Dayden, and she runs something called the Dayden Law Firm. No, she does not have a former career as counsel for a parking garage. And stop saying that. This is worse. She showed up for Walt Nauta's arrangement. He entered a not guilty plea, as expected. She is a former and failed candidate for the for membership in Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis' pet legislature. And she advertises herself as having represented more than 3,000 clients as a public defender. Sounds like she worked for the public defender's office in Florida for about a month and a half, if you know what public defender caseloads are like. They're horrible. She says she's handled civil cases. She's done domestic violence injunctions. She's done child support issues. And she advertises her law firm. With things like a photo of a hot mess Barbie. Barbie's hair's all messed up, and her makeup is a wreck, and her lipstick is smeared. Get caught in a hot mess? Call Dayden Bonner Law, 772-579-2771. How do you reckon Nitwit Nero found himself a lawyer who advertises with Barbies? She does practice in Fort Pierce, and that, of course, is where Judge Aileen Cannon sits the bench. The trial date has now been pushed back, well, to December of this year. So Walt Nauta has a hot mess lawyer. And I don't know if Sasha Dayden has figured it out yet, but she's not going to get paid. Well, from a hot mess to batshit crazy, Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman, formerly a member of the House of Representatives from Minnesota, well, she had to offer up her thoughts on the 4th of July. By going on a weirdo evangelical program called Flashpoint, in which the host thereon asked her about how young people, because certainly Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman has a finger on the pulse of American youth. I mean, while her husband has his fingers all over a Minnesota State Fair corn dog, presumably. God, I can't wait till Monkey Up goes to Minnesota and deep throats a corn dog. It's always fun when you see the... Of course, I don't know. Maybe is her name Casey? Maybe Casey DeKlantis. Honey, don't deep throat the corn dog. It wasn't a great look when your hero Ted Cruz did it. Oh, too late. But she has some, well, batshit crazy views on the founding of this country.
But do you see any type of refreshed interest in government and how things should be working and our founding fathers? I mean, what is it that you're seeing? You got a really ringside seat there of America's youth coming in.
Well, I think sometimes when evil comes into the world and when falsehoods come into our nation, people react to that. There's the 1619 project that came in, and that is a rewriting of American history.
Actually, no, it's actual real American history. But, well, she's on a roll.
A false view of American history, and a lot of people were absolutely appalled by that. And so we have a number of students that want to come in because they want to know what the truth is. They want to know what do the primary source documents of this nation say about America, because in too many undergraduate schools and too many high schools and elementary schools, children are actually being taught lies. They're taught things that aren't true, that America is a hateful country, that we were sinful from our inception. That isn't true.
So slavery is not our original sin? It's not? Because I'm pretty sure it is. I'm absolutely certain that it is. No, it's a lie. It's a lie. And this says more about the Robertson School of Government than it does about Michelle batshit crazy. But no, it says bad things about both of them. Michelle batshit crazy Bachman is apparently the dean of the Robertson School of Government. I wonder if that might be the same Robertson as, say, crazy old coot Marion Pat Robertson, the former liquor supply officer, and now, until the sun burns out and even thereafter, dead Pat Robertson. Girl just wonders. Maybe the Horn Ad Hoc Research, Ad Hoc Robertson School of Government Research Department could get on that.
And so there's a whole other group who are interested in knowing what the truth is. And so they're very motivated and they're active and wanting to get the truth out to people.
Really? I wonder what that truth is. Might it be like they say in Texas that African people came to America looking for work? Might that be the truth she's talking about? Yep, Regent University, there it is. That's otherwise known as the 700 Club Draw Spunky College. Yeah. Pat Robertson. Wonder what Michelle batshit crazy Bachman has to do to go a deanin. Now, since she is crazier than a sprayed roach, let's take a quick peek at Michelle batshit crazy Bachman's pitch. For the aforementioned Robertson School of Government. This should be fun. She said, lying.
Hello, my name is Michelle Bachman.
Bad shit crazy.
I serve Regent University as Dean of the Robertson School of Government. As a mom of five myself and a lifelong learner, I know the importance of finding a university that fits your values and offers programs of study that will help you achieve your career goals. As a dean, I've also learned that the most important question you must answer in this early process is, where can I thrive in knowledge and faith together with the support of faculty to help me manage my day-to-day studies and complete the goals I set out to achieve? I want to reassure you that God is with you. This is a big decision requiring courage and faith, but peace, strength, and grace will follow you as you make the Regent choice. As you consider your options, here is what you need to know about Regent University's Robertson School of Government.
Oh boy.
We have been a top graduate school for over 40 years.
Sure you
have. We have the finest faculty committed to students like you who want to achieve a practical experience and knowledge that will take you to
who want to learn fairy tale ideas of demented right-wing fascist fairy tales of government.
I personally served in each of those avenues in government, and Regent is the perfect school for an individual who seeks to change the world for Christ. It is a graduate school.
For Christ's sake!
Unlike any other in the United States of America. So if you're ready to be strengthened in mind and spirit, take your next step here at Regent University. I invite you to reach out to my team with any questions you might have. We're here because we want to help you move ahead with confidence. We're praying for you, and we look forward to welcoming you to Regent University's Robertson School of Government.
Well, that sounds like a real blast. I bet they're giving the Kennedy School of Government up at Harvard a run for their money. For the money. Lifelong learner? Emilio asks. Wait, she was ever an actual learner at any point whatsoever? Well, all her life long, she's hoped at some point in time to learn something. So far, well, swing and a miss. Oh, that's interesting. Going back to the Young Turks issue and their transphobia. Apparently, a trans woman who is a member of the Young Turks staff has decided it's not worth whatever they're paying her to stay there and listen to transphobia.
I just can't be a part of TYT anymore. It's just too much. It's ridiculous. Because at a certain point, it becomes embarrassing for me. Because how can I, as a trans person, who actually knows the science behind this, who actually is, like, actively trying to support trans people, as somebody that people look up to me, right? People literally, like, send me messages and be like, I'm so inspired, you know, you being a TYT. And I have to deal with messages from them now asking about, hey, what's going on with TYT? Hey, what the hell is happening here? Like, why is Anna saying this? Why is Jenk saying this? And that is just, like, the amount of, like, psychic damage that I have to take every single day dealing with not only the transphobic nonsense of the Republicans, but also whatever Jenk and Anna are on right now. It's just too much. And I just, because at a certain point it becomes embarrassing, because then people think that I'm, like, endorsing their views. And I cannot. I will not. I refuse to lend any support to those views whatsoever.
You just watched a small portion of Benny Carollo's 30-minute-long video explaining in great detail why she is leaving TYT. Now, for those of you who don't know, Benny was a TYT contributor, but as a trans person, she can simply no longer condone the anti-trans rhetoric coming from the show's main hosts.
Yeah, it really sucks when people who, oh no, we're liberal, we're progressive, turn out to be not so much. At all. And so there's that. And we have, and by the way, Darlene, it apparently is on your end. Maybe reboot your phone. Because I just saw a test call come through. Not just my call, but a test call came through from Brother Deacon Asa. and got through without issue. Hey, Saw. Seriously, though, going back to the Monkey Up ad, it's like a slow moving train wreck. You can't help but look. Seriously, though, Brother Deacon says, listen to the playlist on that fucking Death Santos ad. The resident DJ at Vancouver's gayest nightclub couldn't come up with a playlist like that. I haven't seen him do it, but I have a $3 bill here that says Monkey Up lifts a pinky as he hoists that wine glass up to his cake hole. $3 bill. I see. Yeah, I see what you did there. Robertson School of Government? Yep, there. Jeremy says, there's your answer on the founder. It's Marion. Marion! Marion! We do, though. We have an obituary. Don't worry, it's not a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation. This one's actually, well, comes from Vice News. Oh wait, Emilio says of Anna Kasparian. I've seen her several times on TYT before I even saw her there before she was openly... Oh, no, not Anna Kasparian. No, the trans girl. I even saw her there before she was openly trans. Oh, well, bummer. And the thing is, it was such an idiotic hot take for Cenk and Anna. They could not have done... They could not have made plain how little they understand of the science had they shown up with dunce caps on screen with signs around our neck saying, we have no idea what we're talking about, but we're going to do it anyway because it's a good dollar. And I hate that. No one doing this kind of work on our side of the aisle, for the most part, is taking a position like that. Malloy doesn't. I don't think Sam Cedar does. Rick Smith isn't transphobic, and Rick Smith is in the Talkers Magazine Heavy 100. And again, congratulations to my pal Rick. I don't know of any transphobia emanating from lefty or progressive or liberal talk but now this, and it's just gross and wrong and nasty and unhelpful. So anyway, back to the obituary. You will not shed tears. Do you remember Michael Protzman? Michael Protzman was the guy who ran a grift running all over the country to Trump rallies, leading his sheep to be shorn with him, declaring that neither John Kennedy nor John Kennedy Jr. were dead, and that they would be coming back and supporting Nitwit Nero. Well, Michael Protzman, who was the same age as me, is dead. He died last Friday, and I don't know if Jessica's around, but he died last Friday at the Mayo Clinic in the greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere. He died last Friday because, well, at 60 years old, he was still riding motocross. The Minnesota Department of Health confirmed the death to Vice News. His cause of death was listed as multiple blunt force injuries after he lost control of his dirt bike. That was from the Southern Minnesota Regional Medical Examiner's Office. Now, the people who knew and followed Michael Protzman didn't call him Michael Protzman. They called him, cue balls, negative 48. And he was actually from Federal Way in Washington State and was the proprietor of a demolition company, or was up until he got a better gig grifting the rubes who follow QAnon, the cue balls, the cucumbers. And he racked up tens of thousands of followers over on Telegram, the Russian messaging app. And he actually got hundreds of his followers to travel all, from all over the United States to Dallas, remember, November 2021? And said that JFK and JFK Jr. would reappear at Dealey Plaza. I don't suppose I actually have to say that they did not. And like any good charlatan, when it didn't come true, he just shifted the narrative. And the rubes would keep following him. And he told them that he was in close personal contact with Nitwit Nero. He went on to say that, and imagine being so far down the cue ball rabbit hole that you will believe someone when they look at you and say, no, no, Donald John Trump is actually, get the hockey puck and the duct tape. Donald John Trump is actually John F. Kennedy Jr. in disguise. Well, has anybody ever seen JFK Jr. and Donald Trump in the same room? No. Rest my case. And he got the rubes to cover his transportation costs, his food costs, his lodging. And you talk about a cult. Vice notes, numerous followers abandoned their families and spent their life savings following Protzman. One individual, a woman named Katie Garner, well, her sister went down the cue ball rabbit hole after Protzman. Katie Garner said she left her children for this and doesn't even care. She's missing birthdays and holidays for this. She truly believes this is all real and we're the crazy ones for trying to get her to come home, but she won't. I don't believe she will ever come back from this. We are in mourning. An open source researcher who calls himself Karma, who's been tracking the cue ball cult, and particularly the Protzman cult, said Protzman impacted the lives of so many families in such a negative way. Families were torn apart. Many members lost their assets due to following him. Some of these families will never be the same. I do hope that those that followed him reach out to their families and make amends. So anyway, 2 weeks ago, Michael Protzman wrecked his motocross bike and blunt force traumatized his way into the hereafter. But at the same time, the Protzman cult went silent and went so far as to throw people out of the group who were asking about his well-being. All they said was he had a potential brain injury. And then went silent. And yet, the true believers continue to truly believe. And I don't understand that aspect of humanity. But then again, this is a planet where the dominant species, most of them have some sort of an invisible friend. Enter Shelley Mullinax. At one point in time, she was one of the earliest people to follow Protzman, negative 48. But eventually, they had a falling out. And she also stopped getting along with other members of the cult. But even to this day, she is still absolutely certain, Shelley Mullinax is, that everything Michael Protzman said was true. If that was the plan that God had for him, I know that everything is going to be revealed soon. She was actually interviewed by Vice News yesterday, Wednesday. One of the conspiracies going through the Protzman cult is that he was taken out. On the other hand, she said, you know, the one who died was just one version of Michael Protzman. And the one who died was the evil version of Michael Protzman. The good Michael Protzman, JFK Jr. in a mask, is still alive and well. I thought JFK Jr. was Trump. Whoo! Get the butterfly net. And then Vice News went on to ask other members of the Protzman cult, or family members, and every last one of them said, yeah, the member of our family who joined that cult, well, they all say it's fake. And over on the Telegram channel, one of the mods said, we're going to be removing all references to Protzman possibly negative 48 possibly dying until we have absolute verification. But, you know, when cults have things like this happen, there's already all... Nature abhors a vacuum, and so do cults. So one woman said, they killed Michael Protzman's character, so I take over negative 48 crew. Follow me. Follow the gourd! No, follow the sandal! The researcher, Karma, said, Protzman's death won't change anything right away. I believe new conspiracies surrounding his death will evolve, but I do think his followers will dwindle and move on to other influencers over time. Yeah, when somebody comes up with a... better line of cray-cray. Mercy. All right, that's 2 hours of this Thorn in the Side Thursday done. Thank you so much to Jeremy jumping in on Joey and the gang's Rush Challenge. That means it's $35 to go to turn it into $100. And it would be super duper helpful if that could be met. I know, Jeremy. I know. Who the fuck are these freaks? The Demented Multiverse. I like to explain it, you know, it's just leakage. Sometimes there's a crazier universe than ours, and, well, sometimes things slip through. And it's, or maybe it's a universe that's made up entirely of practical jokers. Hey, go over there, and yeah. We'll find out just exactly how stupid they are. Go tell them Donald Trump is JFK Jr. and tell them that Michael Protzman is JFK Jr. in a rubber Michael Protzman mask. Whoop! Oh, what else? Let's see if there's anything breaking. Well, there's some fairly, well, not fairly, there's some brutal news out of the last few days in terms of climate change. What was it, July 3rd and 4th were the hottest in the history of recorded temperatures on the planet? And then this from the Associated Press, a headline. Recent events indicate Earth's climate has entered uncharted territory. Isabella O'Malley is the reporter on the story. She writes, as a warming Earth simmered into worrisome new territory this week. Simmered? Scientists said the unofficial records being set for average planetary temperature were a clear sign of how pollutants released by humans are warming the environment. Nah, the ship was tied outside the environment. Sorry. But the heat is also just one way the planet is telling us something is gravely wrong, the scientists said. Kim Cobb, a climate scientist at Brown University, said, heat sets the pace of our climate in so many ways. It's never just the heat. The article goes on to mention observations by Stefan Rahmstorf of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. The increasing heating of our planet caused by fossil fuel use is not unexpected, but it is dangerous for us humans and for the ecosystems we depend on. We need to stop it fast. And so there are some other firsts. For instance, in April, global ocean temperatures went all the way up to 69.98 degrees Fahrenheit, 21.1 Celsius. That was new and bad. The Copernicus Climate Change Service said ocean temperatures were what they called exceptionally warm in the North Atlantic. And there was an extreme marine heat wave near Ireland, the UK, and in the Baltic Sea. Then there's the wildfire smoke. And, of course, there will be more wildfire smoke. And it will be more likely and both more intense. There's an early El Nino of the in the Pacific. It cranked up somewhere around 2 months earlier than it usually does. And so the El Nino will probably get more even stronger than it is usually. The World Meteorological Organization is projecting that a 98% chance that at least 1 year out of the five coming will be the warmest on record and replace 2016 as the warmest. Antarctic sea ice is warming and shrinking. There are 4.5 million square miles covered by the Antarctic ice sheet. That is 1 million square miles less than average for that date, June 27th, as measured between 1981 and 2010. That's from a science organization called the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Because we like to compare things to the size of states, for instance, the search area for the Libertarian Death Thermos was larger than the state of Connecticut. Well, the ice that is now gone from the Antarctic ice sheet, now, that's almost four times the state of Texas. That is a lot of ice. and, you know, the ice-harvesting amorphous multi-limbed aliens from Norblap 9 didn't come and take it away. The melting Antarctic ice did what ice does when it melts. It turns to water, and that contributes to rises in sea level. We are, in a word, in trouble. Rather big trouble. But don't worry, we're not going to do anything about it. I mean, is there any evidence that we're really doing it? Darlene made me aware in a message last night that Greta Thunberg has earned the ire of constabulary authorities. She engaged in a protest at Malmo, Sweden's harbor, and she's been charged with disobeying a police order to leave a climate protest in Malmo. On Instagram, she said that she and other protesters had blocked the road for oil trucks in Malmo Harbor. Malmo, I suppose. The climate crisis is already a matter of life and death for countless people. We chose to not be bystanders and instead physically stop the fossil fuel infrastructure. We are reclaiming the future. She faces as much as 6 months jail time. For her action trying to defend this planet from the people who are trying to render it unfit for human habitation. The prosecutor, Charlotte Ottesen, said, "You have the freedom to demonstrate, but you must not demonstrate in such a way that it causes disturbances for others." Well then, Madam Prosecutor, it's not much of a demonstration, is it? She's a hero. You know how I know she's a hero? Because of the degree to which the people hell-bent on making this planet uninhabitable for human beings hate her, loathe her, despise her. And they do. But look, it doesn't matter if it's Sweden, the United States, or whatever the most liberal country in the world is. It's not us. The power structure is the power structure is the power structure. And wealthy nations that have gotten wealthy with the combustion of fossil fuels, well, they don't much want to hear from people saying, hey, might be a good idea if you stopped ruining the planet for the rest of us. Because money talks. And money also walks. All over the people who don't have the money. People are dying as a result of the climate crisis. In real time, now, yesterday, the day before, months before, years before. And the oil companies and the coal companies and the gas companies knew it. And they're doing nothing. They're doing less than nothing. and doing something, and that is making bad matters worse. What does a person trying to live in the Maldives and seeing the ocean encroach ever faster upon their little islands, what do they owe? They didn't contribute to the climate crisis nearly to the extent that the United States and the so-called developed world has. But they're going to sink. While the oil company execs laugh. All the way to the bank. God. Jude said, climate protests and Dear Greta. Reminds me, Robin, of the photo you sent me years ago of, was it Judy Bonds, who placed herself in the middle of a road stopping one of those huge trucks involved in the mountaintop removal? What a moment in time that captured. Love to all. Love to you, Jude. It's a matter of, you know, for people like Greta Thunberg or Judy Bonds, it was a matter of conscience. And it is a matter of conscience. But of course, it isn't. Those matters of conscience aren't all wrapped up in bigotry and Christian hate. So they don't matter to Republicans. They won't matter to, because it will eventually wind up there. You know, there are climate suits in progress against the corporations that are trying to render this planet uninhabitable for human beings. And those cases, well, will, I suspect, wind up before the Supreme Court of the United States, who will, in line with what they have done in the past, in former iterations, do everything in their power to protect the money, in this case, the oil companies. I think back to the way they, the Supreme Court reduced the punitive damages award against Exxon in the Exxon Valdez disaster. They took the punitive out of punitive damages because we can't do that to the poor, downtrodden, beleaguered oil companies. Because they're important. Jeez. Oh, and I mentioned Casey DeClantis. She really is the brains of the outfit. And so she has decided to gin up her own bullshit AstroTurf group with a video announcement. Warning, stupidity ahead and hate.
In America, we've witnessed a lot and put up with enough.
You guys gotta go.
He is arresting her for being on a public playground. Her kids are here.
We've been forced into silence.
funny, but we've been forced into silence, and yet it's a video where Casey DeClantis is anything but silenced. A crying baby having a mask put over its face. Forced into compliance. Keep your mask on. Yeah, because we don't want the little kid, didn't want the little kid to die during a pandemic. Jesus Christ, these people.
Told that we must trust the science.
Indoor and outdoor venues should be closed.
We've been told that we must deny truth, back down, and look the other way. Enough is enough. When you come after our kids, we fight back.
Yes, you do.
Because there's nothing we won't do to protect our children. They're not yours.
They'll protect their children. They're not yours. You know, as long as the children are straight and white, and cis, preferably male, because Casey DeClantis certainly isn't going to protect any rights for anyone capable of becoming pregnant. Oh, fuck no.
Our kids.
Our nation's children are all our children.
Now, oh, God, they've made such hay over this, and I kind of hate it when we give it to them. That was from a pride march where sarcastically the crowd was chanting, mocking the Casey DeClantises of the world, "We're coming for your children."
Will not allow you to exploit their innocence to advance your agenda. We are no longer silent. We are united. And we have finally found our fighter.
Finally. And their fighter is a bot in white go-go boots who likes ads with disco rhythms.
We're not going to let you impose an agenda on our kids. We're going to stand up for our kids.
We do for America.
Curious, he was addressing a group of barking and grunting right-wingers when he said, "We're not going to allow you to impose an agenda on our kids." I kind of wish they'd stop doing that.
What he did for us in Florida. Schools open. Parents' rights defended. School choice universal. Critical race theory prohibited.
Yeah, they prohibited critical race theory. The only problem is you can't prohibit an idea. You can only try to suppress it. And the people who do that are generally referred to as fascists.
DEI stopped. Child mutilation illegal.
It is illegal. Unless, of course, the kid is intersex, and then the Casey DeClantises of the world can have non-consensual surgery performed upon them and make determinations about what their sex will be before they're even aware of who they are.
Girls' sports saved.
Oh, girls' sports was saved! Thank God! No, it wasn't. It was never in peril.
Communities protected, our economy growing, and freedom guaranteed.
And freedom is guaranteed, and you know how we know that? Because a little ginger-headed boy hit a baseball off of a t-ball tee. Freedom. Freedom! Wolverines!
But winning the fight in Florida is just the beginning. We must protect parents' rights and the innocence of our children. We must restore sanity.
What is it with these soundtracks? They're all martial. They're all designed to whip the rubes into a frenzy.
In our society, we need every mama and every grandmama in every corner of the country to stand up and fight back by electing Ron DeSantis president of the United States.
Sorry, but this grandmama won't do it. Nope.
Join us by texting MAMAS to 512345.
Join up by texting fascist to 888-888-8814 Omaha. Hike. Oh, God. And it's not being well received, of course. But you gotta grant it to Casey DeClantis. She does Butch a lot better than her beep burp husband does. Of course, they also dummied up the COVID death rate in Florida. That's why he was called Ron DeSantis. Among other things, one of Monkey Up's press creeps, a guy named Fred Piccolo Jr., no, really. Well, the Florida Department of Health said Governor DeSantis and members of his staff repeatedly questioned the accuracy of the COVID-19 death rates, with his press secretary tweeting, "We can tell you definitively that Florida is counting deaths that were not directly caused by COVID-19. And added, Mr. Piccolo also sought to downplay the COVID-19 pandemic in other ways. On one occasion, he erroneously tweeted, "We had one COVID death in Florida yesterday." Yes, you read that right, one. In fact, on that day in question, there were 47 deaths. This is in, the New York Times, on the other hand, said, Mr. DeSantis has not shown that he is a natural campaigner, has failed to take off in the polls, and his carefully choreographed public events have offered few headline-generating moments, as his campaign, until recently, has worked to shield him from potentially awkward, unscripted interactions, beep, burp, burp, with voters and the news media. She's the brains of the outfit. Mehdi Hassan over at MSNBC said, imagine thinking in 2023 that the threat to our kids is from masking in a pandemic. The actual threat to our kids, missing from this video, are mass shooters in schools who are able to exist, of course, with the support of GOP gun laws, especially those in Florida. A former staffer to Barack Obama said, a couple of weeks ago, DeSantis' campaign was pitching stories about how his wife was the secret weapon to help sand off his weird, rough edges. Now she's releasing insane agitprop videos. Bizarre choice. And here's a horror thought. Peter Schorsch, who publishes Florida Politics, said, the more it becomes clear DeSantis will not win in 2024, the more you'll see them position Casey DeSantis for 2026. And one other individual said, this is utterly indistinguishable from QAnon. And that is true. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. It's apparently working. Hey, welcome to the program.
Finally. Persistence pays off.
Nothing can take the place of persistence. Calvin Coolidge said that.
Well, and you suggesting that when I power off the phone and power back on, that's a simple solution I hadn't even thought of. So that seemed to work because I finally got a ringtone and I got through. You know, isn't that funny how high tech and you still have to unplug and replug?
Oh, yeah. And so is it a hardwire phone or is it a cell phone?
No, it's a cell phone.
Yeah, sometimes updates come through and it'll restart, and then it happens here too.
It's been a while since I got an update on this. I mean, I regularly update it when I'm supposed to, but we'll see how I sound too if I keep breaking up like the last time. Hopefully, that's been corrected. So let me know if there's an issue with
that. So far, so good.
Yeah, and I mean, Dave and the Blind sounded pretty good yesterday when I think he called in or yeah. Somebody called in on the first one. So, not to belabor the point on Anna Kasparian, but I am rather surprised at her. I'm not saying I'm necessarily surprised at TYT generally, but she tends to be more to the left than even some of her colleagues. I mean, I haven't listened to her in a long time, and I haven't watched them in a long time, but she may be doing a mea culpa, because hopefully she'll get plenty of shit. And the fact that she's so clueless when she has, she had a trans, I think you said it was trans woman employee working there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe didn't she, I think she even had, I thought she had trans, anchors that would, substitute, or, I thought that they had that, too. So this just,
well, they may have Darlene, but where, and of course they play that card. Oh no, we fully support the trans community. We just don't believe in children being genitally mutilated. Or the science isn't all in on puberty blockers, which is bullshit. The science has been all in for decades. So they are focused primarily on harming trans adolescents.
I hope she gets plenty of shit for this does a self-correct on that. Because this smacks very much of the, anti-vaxxer stuff too. Greta Thunberg, and I sent you, an article few weeks ago about that super volcano in Italy, near Naples, and that is extremely concerning, because this thing first exploded in 1538, and it's had explosions through 60s and 80s, I think, and they're saying that this thing is rocking and rolling, and the first explosion was a 7 on the volcanic explosivity index, which goes up to 8. And this was back in 1538. And that they're thinking this thing, if it goes, it could hit 8. On that index, and it's near Naples. I think there's literally a town, because of the P's, that's sitting on top of it, so near, like really close. And, it's not Pompeii, but similar. I think it's called
Campi Flegrei.
Yeah.
You and me and complicated volcanoes, Darlene.
Yeah, what the hell?
Are you a fiala yokel?
Although that's not as complicated as that. Yeah, like I still haven't gotten that right. Is the AFL air quote? I know it's not the correct. I've already been, told that's not exactly right on, but that's where I'm at with it. And one day I'll try to get closer to the exact pronunciation. But the other thing in that article, I think there was a video, and it just, blew my mind. Sorry for that. See what I did there? It blew my mind in that it talked about a direct correlation between receding glaciers and volcanic activity. In that, there's a lot of volcanoes that are essentially muffled and covered up,
and this is
by
one of them.
All of that ice. I don't think that. Well, this isn't southern.
Yeah, this is yeah, near
Italy.
Naples. Yeah, it's not covered by ice, but it's. You wouldn't know it's there to look at it. It's just a gentle depression that's about 14 kilometers long.
Yeah.
And a half a million people live in the red zone.
Right. And there's multiple earthquakes. And now they're saying, well, that doesn't mean it's going to, it's going to blow. But just the correlation, with that, in that article, the video talked about heating glaciers and how that can also increase volcanic activity. But considering, you know, what the scientists talked about today with, you know, essentially how everything is like on fire, and then you want to add into a super volcanic explosion and what that could do to the atmosphere. It's the prospects here are quite sobering, and it's lightning. The other thing you got me thinking when you were talking about your example with travel between the states, and I don't know if you mentioned it specifically, but I was thinking about the Commerce Clause. You know, really, Congress, if we can get good majorities, you know, could they potentially pass something under the Commerce Clause to protect the rights of LGBTQIA plus citizens, trans citizens, et cetera? Because really, in your example alone, you have a layover, say, even if it's for a couple of hours in Florida on your way to Brazil, you're going to spend money, right? You're going to maybe grab a coffee, maybe have dinner. People that travel out of state to go to pride parades, they're spending money. It's contributing to the economy. And we know that if there's one thing that our political so-called betters hold above all else, it's capitalism. Even Democrats, you know, even President Biden, you know, I'm a capitalist. Elizabeth Warren, I'm a capitalist. And so I'm wondering if there's something under that, too. I think it's Article 1, right? Is that Article 1? So, I don't know. I'm just going to throw that out there. I'm wondering if there's something under the Commerce Clause.
A lot of constitutional law flows from the Commerce Clause.
Yes, and I know that was a big bugaboo for Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the ACA case, where Chief Justice Roberts, you know, kind of punted a bit and said, well, Congress has a right to tax, and this is a tax. Making people pay for, making everybody pay into that system. But then he said, but we're not going to force states to accept the Medicare, Medicaid money.
Right, because freedom.
And she went apeshit over that. You know, she wrote a long dissent, which I only got through part of it. I think it's still on my, because on my computer somewhere, about how that violated the Commerce Clause. So,
you were right, Darlene. The Commerce Clause is Article 1, I think Section 8, Clause 3. The Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Pretty simple, really. But there's a huge body of Supreme Court precedent on it.
Yeah, probably.
But the thing is, in my hypothetical, such legislation shouldn't be necessary. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and you know the full faith and credit clause is full faith and credit, Article 4, Section 1. Full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't see why you can't do both, you know, and one might be the dominant theory.
The difference being that the full faith and credit clause exists, the Commerce Clause exists, But in a case of seizing someone and their liberty, it seems like the full faith and credit clause would be determinative. Because there's,
it's probably a stronger argument, yeah. And it might be a stronger reason, for sure. I'm thinking in terms of how everything about this country is money and...
Right, yes. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah, so, you know, but I like your... I mean, it's disturbing, but I like your idea of constructive
secession. Yeah.
That is, that's an excellent point, because I do think that is happening. And I almost feel like Democrats and the Biden administration and Biden, they're a little too quiet about it. Like, I think, like, they need to be more forceful and maybe, you know, against this and speaking out against what's happening to the LGBTQIA plus community. And maybe they'll ramp that up as we're nearing the election. Scott, you know, it's still sort of a power hanging over my thought process since you announced that he had passed away. And I had, as I mentioned to you, I had intended to call in yesterday. We had an impromptu on the front porch in his honor, but, you know, like I said, when Alfie gets out of the donut bed on his bitch, I have to tend to him. So it is, you know, although I appreciate the, you know, the macabre about, you know, macabre and, you know, the things that trouble me about death, I think one of the big things is, damn, you know, I wanted to see how everything turned out. You know what I mean? It's sort of like,
yeah, actually I do.
You know, I'm going to hate to, you know, when that happens. I'm going to want to know. And, you know, I actually checked the timeline on this because when I called in all caught up in the libertarian death thermos, I think it was the last time I called in on it. I said, hey, Scott, you know, if you're listening, you know, I hope you call in, right? But it was already too late.
He was already
and
gone.
So, Scott... He was already gone, because based on the timeline, if I'm remembering this, because I've been looking up a lot of things in the last hour or so, he died, I think you said, on the 13th of June.
Well, and see, that's not entirely accurate on my part, Darlene. That is when the notice went up.
So, I mean, it's always sooner. It may have been earlier than June 13th, but
yeah.
The point being that the libertarian death armor took its final plunge, I think, on June 15th. And I was, you know, and we didn't hear from him during that whole thing. And I was like, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what Scott has to say about it, you know. So, that obviously wasn't meant to be. But that's sort of one of the things that I think of. It's like, when it comes my time, I'm like, damn. All the things that I'm going to miss out on, you know, the advancements in technology, just all the things, you know, but billions of people have gone before us. So, I don't know. I could spiral down into a whole weird thought process on it. But, you know, he was such a familiar voice that called in every night. So, you know, when he didn't, and it wasn't like he hadn't done that before, you know, where he, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
It wasn't like he, hold on, I've got an emergency going by here. you know, it wasn't like there were times where he got down and said, you know, I'm still okay. I just haven't called in because I needed some time to decompress. Every once in a while, you know, as though he was always the horn optimist, you know, there were times where he got pretty real and said, you know, things aggravated him. Or upset him, and he kind of lost sight of that positivity. I do think that he was warning us, because near the end, when he called in, he kept saying to you, you know, I'm not feeling well. I'm not feeling great. So I'm shocked, but not surprised. I think a part of him was kind of letting us know in his own way that things weren't looking good. I don't know if he ever, I don't know if he still needed the rollator or the walker that he was using. He had a fall of some sort, right?
Yeah, and that's what sent him into the hospital and then rehab.
Yeah. And who knows? You know, he may have been, I mean, he seemed positive about it. Having to use the walker, you know, I'm using it. He seemed loose, or at least neutral, from what I could tell. I may have missed other conversations that he had with you on it, but from what I heard, he seemed okay with it, you know. But I also thought that he's probably thinking it's a temporary thing for him. But to me, I sense like it might not be. Like he might need an assistive device going forward. And that can be very difficult psychologically for men in particular. Where, you know, somebody like him, I think he had his physicality, right? He would use public transportation. He would go where he needed to go. And it sounded like that, you know, those days could be over in terms of, being able to do that on his own power without having an assistive device helping him. And that could have worn on him over time, too. He was relatively young. I thought he was in his 70s already. Sounds like he was going to turn 68 at any day now.
Right.
I'm kind of just rambling, but
no, you're not.
It's I feel bad. I feel really bad because you know he had a good radio voice, so and he could change the tone on his voice. Well, he had that talent where he could do that, and he I think had hands down some of the best jokes. He would just come out with these things and just everybody would be rolling and cracking up. And, you know, I'd get messages from other horn listeners that would say, hey, did you hear what he said? It's just hilarious. And, so it's too bad. Again, shocked, not surprised. But I think he also lived a very full life. That's the other thing. I think he lived a very full life, and he seemed very content, very happy in his bachelorhood in later life. I think he was married at least once, possibly twice. So he did it all. And so I think that's, there was some solace in that because he seemed content. He had made.
He was, but it was very obvious, Darlene, that he was absolutely, and this is no critique, he was absolutely terrified of the pandemic. And I think, and please don't anybody take this the wrong way, I think it contributed to his unwillingness to get out and about. And that in turn may have contributed to his overall well-being. Because he also talked about
weakening.
It weakening, weight gain, lack of mobility. Sedentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything I am. Although I do have an exercise routine. I do, which really, I mean, those health factors, just even a little bit of walking can dramatically improve.
Yes.
Your health issue, you know, risks or whatever. Like I was struggling for a while with my blood pressure and cholesterol levels and stuff. So I strapped myself into this glider unit, which probably would have been good for him. And, you know, I'll do anywhere from like 3 to 6 rotations around in the house. Everything, you know, got damn well near corrected. It was great. You know, I had really good blood work. And it was just a little bit. It's just a little bit. You don't have to go crazy. You don't have to be, you know, if you can run 10 miles, great. But if you can just walk some, you know, easily and safely, that can make all the difference. I assume he was vaccinated, against the virus. I'm assuming he wore a mask when he needed to. And that's kind of sad because, you know, what you're saying, if he, in fact, was trying to, you know, prevent himself from getting ill. Whoa, you know what was really wild? A hawk is right near me. It just flew up and landed right here. Oh, there it goes. I think it's a broad-winged hawk. Isn't that wild? Maybe that's Scott saying, "Hey, how you doing?"
I upgraded to a raptor.
The symbolism. Yeah, the symbolism of that. And I say, "Hey, how you doing?" Right. I mean, literally less than 40 feet away from me at my level, and this hawk's flown at me before. Overhead, so he's probably saying, "Oh, I know who this lady is." Anyway, so it's kind of sad because in trying to prevent himself from getting ill and possibly dying from this disease, from this virus, he may have actually, like you said, may have shortened his life. And I do think it contributed to my mom's passing too. Even though, you know, she got the virus, I think, 3 times. Both times, no issues. She did not show any symptoms. She was well vaccinated. The third time, though, she had some lung issues. And my dad insisted that she go on prednisone to knock that out of her. And I was against it. I said, "Look, this is going to create a problem with her immune system." But he pushed the issue. She got on the prednisone. She's only on it for like 5 days, but it fucked up her immune system, Robin. She wound up getting COVID and it was not good. And then she had to go into the hospital. And then what happened? She got a staph infection in that fucking hospital. Right. And that's ultimately what did her in. It was a type of MRSA. Okay. So you could be right. You know, even though, there may be no direct infection from the virus, the fallout, you know, may be more widespread in examples like Scott. He clearly meant a lot to a lot of people. With everybody calling in, I'm a syllable Rex. He just found out about it. So, yeah. So, homage to Scott in San Diego. Marinoff, you said his last name was?
Yes.
So we could say his last
yes.
name?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I mean, that's...
Sounds kind of Russian to me. And I know, and I know you okay. share some of that heritage too, right?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. My a maternal grandfather came over from Russia. Yep. Yep. He succumbed to prostate cancer, so he died before I was born. And, you know, when he came over, he spoke very little English and, of course, you know, went to work in the factories in Waterbury in the brass factories, in the brass mill factories. So there was no regulation or, you know, nothing to protect the workers from chemicals and being poisoned. So, you know, my and my cousin's theory that he died, you know, that he got prostate cancer from working in those factories. So, you know, sadly I never met him. My mother loved him to death. She just raved about him. So, yeah, living in America.
Greatest no? country in the history Coming of the world on earth now, today, forever in the universe under God.
Yeah. Did Scott have some sort of a fracture? Did he develop a fracture? Like, what happened there?
I don't think so. It was just a generalized weakness issue.
Interesting.
And it may have been exacerbated by weight. But that's speculative, and I'm not real comfortable with that. Oh, I do need to offer up a quick thank you to John in Central PA. We're down to $25 on Joey's challenge, y'all. So. Just a little bit of time left in the program. If we could finish that challenge, it would be fantastic. And that would get us down to, let's see, we've got that would get us down to 500 to go, 800 to finish the week tomorrow. Sorry, I hate to interrupt, but I had not thanked John
cool.
yet.
That's
I wanted
fine.
To make sure that
you gotta,
I didn't
you gotta do. Screw up. Gotta do what you gotta do. No reason for funds. Yeah, so I was not connected with him on Facebook. I would see certain photos of him on Facebook, but I wasn't sure if he was a tall, thin guy. He looked tall to me. I don't know if he was tall.
He was tall. He was extremely tall. I think he was north of 6'4".
Oh, okay. Oh. Yeah. I mean, if he was extremely thin, sometimes cancer can ravage through a person's body when they're extremely thin. I know that happened to somebody over there. It's like, boom, you know, and it took like 10 days and the person was gone. But yeah, like no meat on bones, you know? So, I mean, we could speculate as to what he had, but, whatever it was, it sounds like it, you know, if he was going to go, it does sound like to a certain extent it was mercifully quick. I hope he didn't suffer, and it's too bad, it's sad. And yeah, when he wasn't really responding, and then June sent me an email, do you have his email? I'm like, this is not looking good. So anyway,
I get it. It's
raise
hard.
A martini glass.
It's hard to process.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be processing for a while.
He's in the living room every. Yeah. Well, you talk to him almost every night, and he was in the in my living room, on my kitchen where I have the iPad pretty much every night. So, you know, with a voice that I could still hear very well in my head, but, we're not going to hear it. And I think to some degree, this is affecting people probably even more than Mr. Stress when he passed. Because I know he called in, but I think with Mr. Stress, we kind of knew, like, when he had the stroke on air, and we were able to basically, because I remember sending you, I think he's having a stroke and something's wrong, and then thankfully somebody else who was listening.
And, that's another one of those people that I worry about and wonder about that sort of just disappeared.
The
guy who went and saved Mr. Stress's life, Thomas. He lived not too far from Mr. Stress and made sure that he survived that crisis. And don't for a minute think that I'm not speaking directly to you, Darlene, but I do think about the people I don't hear from. I think about the voices I no longer hear.
Yeah.
And it does affect me. I mean, I know the number of people we lost during the Great Purity Wars of 2016, and that hurt me deeply. Because I've never wavered in my beliefs or my philosophies or
right.
My, yeah. But
right, and I've learned from that, and I think you're right. And it's thinking otherwise is only getting us worse. In a worse position, like with a third party candidates running, people contesting Biden. And I think Biden's done a fantastic job. I don't understand what the hell's going on with this country. I think people are fucked up, quite honestly.
And it's going to take a while to unfuck us.
Generations, probably.
I mean, when you consider what the Supreme Court has done, we were both thinking
the same
thing.
Oh, God, that's
going to
take. Yes, and, Elena Kagan said the quiet part out loud. I believe it was in the 303 in her dissent. The 303 website case, she came right out at the end and said, this court is unconstitutional. What this court is doing is unconstitutional. Finally, and so, Alito now, he's going to target her because he likes to pick on her.
Right, because he's a bully and a creep.
Yeah. And did you say you'd like to take a look at his browser history?
Oh, boy, would I. There's probably
there's probably enough gay porn
and trans porn in there to float a battleship.
Or just Elliot Spitzerin, man. I just see him Elliot Spitzerin. I'm telling you, really, I do.
I wanted to bring up another story because I just saw this, and I know I say this a lot, but damned if I don't feel like it's true. I come up with an idea, and the next thing you know, there it is. So we were talking about the whole driver's license, full faith and credit, et cetera, et cetera. And this one actually touches upon you tangentially, Darlene. As of July 1st, in the state of Florida, no longer recognizes driver's licenses that have been issued by other United States to undocumented immigrants for driving purposes only, not for federal identification. And Florida now says that their Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles will no longer recognize those licenses that are generated from Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Rhode Island, and Vermont.
Really? So, whoa. So they're not recognizing Connecticut driver's licenses?
Not if they were issued to an undocumented immigrant.
An undocumented immigrant. Oh, okay. All right. So that's just one step. That's just one step towards just...
I'm next.
...shit-canning any. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if I ever fucking get my little... I have a driver's license. I've been driving for years, decades. But I don't have this special little freaking stamp on it that says I can drive Wanda because she's an adaptive man. So, you know, anything that mars the driver's license, quote unquote, mars it, makes it different as an MARS, mars it, is eventually going to probably be unacceptable to monkey up.
Oh, without a doubt.
Getting out of control.
And he has got
it's
to be
out of control.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, Joe Biden needs to give Ron DeSantis the John Kennedy George Wallace treatment.
Hmm.
I personally think the National Guard should be federalized and tasked with protecting migrants, the African American community, and the LGBTQ community in Florida, and say very plainly that Ron Monkey Up DeSantis and his pet legislature brought this on themselves, Darlene.
Well, don't leave out the disabled community too, because
yeah.
we are the largest minority group. At 25%, because we, you know, disabilities know no boundaries. You know, you can be black and disabled, you can be trans and disabled, you can be lily white and disabled, you can, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. It is transcendent.
They're coming. Well, they already came for us. I mean, it's just terrible what happened during the Trump debacle when he squatted in the White House. That asshole, I would say that fucking asshole, squatted in the White House masquerading as president. I know it's lengthy, but that's what I say. His administration took great pains to deny people with disabilities, SSI and SSDI. The denial rate was massive. People, they were denying people who clearly could not work, were desperate to get on. Some claimants killed themselves. Others just basically, they kept getting a runaround and denied with the hearings and denial, and then they wound up dying. They just couldn't outlive the process. That fucker is,
that's vicious. That's vicious.
That is just beyond vicious. And, you know, so the trial, trial period of piloting of going after vulnerable groups happened in that little bit of a, you know, microcosmic way, within that agency, SSA, I guess, in terms of going after people with disabilities. So, you know, they're expanding out, and it seems as though it's not, it's getting worse.
Well, yeah, it is. And if I could go back to the Florida driver's license story for just a second, Darlene.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
because there's a quote from Monkey Up in it, where he said, "Someone who is in our country illegally and has violated our laws should not possess a government-issued ID which allows them access to state-funded services and other privileges afforded to lawful residents." Now, of course, this is Florida with one of the highest uninsured ranks in the country after Texas. And it is just so monumentally stupid because I can't imagine there are a lot of people with licenses from Hawaii coming to Florida. Why would you? But Connecticut to Florida?
Yes.
Vermont to Florida?
Yes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing here
Absolutely.
Is you cannot get insurance. You cannot get auto insurance without a driver's license. And it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah. No fault. We have no fault. Here
so,
in Connecticut, at least.
So if you can't get insurance and you're in a wreck and it's the fault of the migrant driver, the person
mm-hmm.
harmed is screwed with the exception of uninsured motorist coverage, which it's entirely possible Florida does not even require. I don't know.
Very good point.
But uninsured motorist
point.
Coverage is almost never sufficient to cover the damages.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And so what Monkey Up is, Monkey Up is doing is making the roads in Florida more dangerous.
He is evil and destructive, and the problem is he's more intelligent than Trump. He's got no personality, but he is right on the surface. And the likes of your Filthy Morning Habit and others basically taking that fucker's candidacy seriously is an outrage. To me, they should be, you know, and even Jen Psaki, who I like, I wanted to smack her upside the head before she got her own program. She's like, well, you know, far be it for Ron DeSantis to take any advice from me, but what I would suggest is that he, you know, he choose his position and stick with it. Well, what the fuck are you giving him advice for? What the fuck are you giving him advice for, Jen? I mean, this guy he's destructive. None of this shit should be normalized.
Dangerous. Dangerous. And let me add into that by way of agreeing with you that I hold equal disdain for anyone who treats Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s candidacy as having any sort of legitimacy whatsoever.
Absolutely.
And candidate Marianne Moonbeam, just, you know, whatever.
Marianne Moonbeam, mm-hmm.
I just came up with that off the cuff.
That's a good one. Marianne Moonbeam. Yeah. None of this shit should be normalized. None of it. And the legacy media, the for-profit media, they are doing such damage with this. And my only hope is I hope that it will continue, that these media outlets will continue to fail. I don't know what the hell's going on, but this is like the third emergency vehicle going out north. Excuse me. I mean, you should see how fast they drive through here, Robin. Oh my God! They're going like 80 miles an hour. That might have been hazmat. So I wonder if something spilled somewhere. But anyway, we got kids on the street. It's scary the way they drive through there. I hope they continue to fail and that we have, you know, like ProPublica, or I say ProPublica, ProPublica, they've been doing freaking excellent journalism. They've been doing, and I, you know, like outlets like that, you know, are fantastic. And thank goodness we have them. I like The Guardian. They're pretty good for the most part. I think we know who they are, for the most part. But the ABCs, the CBSs, the, you know, Fox is just pathetic for so many different reasons. Oh, you must have heard it. Did you hear National Geographic?
Yeah, they're quitting.
At least they're famous, you know, hardcover, you know, not hardcover, but their physical magazine.
Yeah.
Will no longer be on the store shelves. Now they're all going to, I guess they're going to all virtual, you know, online stuff. And all freelancers. You know? So I'm telling you, you know, those articles are not easy to write. Because I've read through them and I've had a subscription to them.
But this is par for the course for a Rupert Murdoch joint.
What? He owns National Geographic?
Yes.
I did not know that. Oh my God, that's like the Koch brothers and Nova. Oh,
yeah.
If I knew, oh, I had no idea. He's like a freaking, he's like a stealth 90-year-old bastard. Like, he's got his fingers in everything. If I knew that was one of his, I never would have supported it. I had no idea. I thought National Geographic was like its own independent kind of sort of thing.
Fox News and Rupert Murdoch are now owners of the National Geographic magazines and TV show, and it goes back to April. The dateline on that article is April 27th, 2017.
They unwittingly supported them.
I'm sorry, Darlene. Damn it. Hey, thank you to Kevin. Thank you to Kevin in Massachusetts. Joey and the gang's challenge has been met, so tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $800. And hopefully we won't cross the three-digit mark for a long ever this month. That would be fantastic. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you so much.
That would be fantastic. All right. Woohoo! Woohoo! Wow. So, oh man, I'll tell you, boy, things have changed. Things have changed in this country.
Yeah. You mentioned National Geographic because everything reminds me of a movie. I remember Jimmy Stewart's character in It's a Wonderful Life when he is young. Bailey. What's his first name? George. Young George Bailey. And he's got his he said, I am a member of the National Geographic Society, and I will someday be an explorer. And he's got his magazine with him there, and he's in the drugstore, remember?
Yeah. Yep.
And it was so respectable and so knowledgeable, and, well, that's what happens when Rupert Murdoch gets his hooks in you.
He destroys everything, like Trump. You know, everything turns to shit. You know, so that I have some of the older ones. I have the one with the dinosaurs on it that, like, it looks like it's not you know, like a drawing. I've got that. I still have that one. And I've got a couple of them. That, you know, it's hard. And so these are much older before Rupert Murdoch got involved. And they're sort of like these magazines you would be like, I really should like throw these out there, but you don't want to.
Right.
Because they just seem like magazines that are going to, you know, they have some sort of value to them. So they're going online. Goodbye, National Geographic, no longer on your magazine.
Right. So, yeah. And
not a store near you, but
I remember my grandmother had years and years and years of National Geographics, and she kept them, and they were all on a bookshelf here when I was little. And I remember reading
probably pristine condition.
I remember reading an article on some little place in Appalachia in Kentucky from a 1962 issue, and there was a picture of a girl in it. An Appalachian girl. And it was one of those moments where I would just look at the photo and wish I was her. I mean, it goes that far back. It's that deep. I mean, and we're talking about, I'm looking at it in 1971. Okay. It was 1960. Yeah, just wow. Randomly picked it out, and it's like, oh, that could be me.
Wow.
But she, you know, and they were always so fun to thumb through. And of course, I think Scott and I even had conversations at one point about the fact I said something on air one evening about I was sitting at the doctor's office reading a Reader's Digest from 1968. And we had some sort of great fun with that. And I think doctors and dentist's offices are where old magazines go to die.
Yeah.
By the way, I just got a note in from Cynthia in the Bay Area. Cynthia saying unequivocally, there is no fucking way in hell that I'm going to vote for either RFK Jr. or Ms. Moonbeam. And to think I used to like rotted FK Jr. Hold on. But that was before I knew he was an anti-vaxxer, the fucking idiot. I guarantee people have died because of him. And I quit my National Geographic subscription way back when Murdoch bought them. And I wrote them a nasty letter about it, too. I was fucking disgusted. Things have changed, and all too much of it. Not for the better.
Yeah, he's right.
Well, I'm going to wrap things up, Darlene. I'm so glad you finally got through.
Yeah, persistence pays off. But thanks for suggesting that power off and read.
Well, you have to understand, I did do telemarketing and tech support for a little while. And the first question, have you turned off your router and turned it back on again? And you can hear the fury.
Yeah, like,
you can hear the waves of fury just emanating through the phone line. I wouldn't have called if I hadn't already done that.
It was like, duh. You know, it's so obvious, the only thing to do it. And I think, have I broken up at all?
No,
I don't think so.
It's been crystal clear and near perfect.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
We may have it sorted. By the way, Jude with a note on National Geographic. Last time I picked up a copy at the checkout stand, it was $18. Now I know why.
Wow.
Rupert's got a fortune to keep making.
I think the online script was, who knows, maybe you know, the years go by so quickly. Who knows, maybe I have a subscription before he took it over. But I think it was like barely $25 a year. So it was, you know, and you had access to all these magazines. So this probably is more cost effective, you know, and I don't need one more magazine taking up real estate in the home, you know. But, all right. Well, thank you for listening to me and for our conversation, and I will let you go. And wherever Scott is, I hope he's having a blast and sipping a martini. I think he likes martinis, or a cup of coffee, and is laughing at us, feeling so bad for him. You know, who knows? He may be having the time of his life. So, all right.
I hope, you know, sometimes I find myself wishing for an afterlife so that I can be absolutely certain that some people are going to hell. But in this case, it's one of those moments where I would like for there to be an afterlife so that Scott can be somewhere zipping one-liners at Jesus or something.
Exactly. Well, we don't know. I mean, we're all energy. Who knows? I mean, what happens? You know, I think one of the listeners said something very nice about how, you know, mentioning him by name, you know, talking about him, he's here still. And, you know, and I felt my mother's presence.
Yeah, that was Will in Los Angeles who said that.
Will, my, so you know, again, all these things, it just make you wonder. And like I said, my biggest thing is, well, not only, you know, the dying process and what that's going to be like. I, you know, everybody hopes to die in their sleep, I guess. But is, shit, what am I going to miss out on?
Yeah.
It's a heck of a ride.
By the way, one last thing. Brother Deacon Asa, who has just this phenomenal ability to recall things from this program, Scott's Marinoff side actually came from the Czech Republic, if I remember correctly. He said he was like third generation.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Excellent. Wow. Good memory.
Brother Deacon is amazing. I asked him the other night if he had a database or something that he was keeping. He goes, no, I just associate things I hear on this program with certain waypoints in my life.
Wow. Wow.
That's the sign of an amazing memory.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Bro Deek's got it.
Yeah. And I mean I don't have a shabby one, but it's not at that level.
Amazing.
Well, Darlene, have a lovely
evening,
dear. All right,
well, you too. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Darlene in Connecticut. It's always nice when it's not. I know this may sound strange, but I'm not comfortable when it's a three-hour fill of Robster. Because I feel like I'm, because I am, monologuing. And all the great moments and all the great ideas on this program happen in conversation. And that's why a long time ago I came up with the idea that we were not going to do talk radio, we were going to do conversation radio. And to the best of my knowledge, that's kind of my thing. Can in Northwest PA, stop that. I got it. I'm not sharing it. As a retired hospice nurse, dear family, Jude says, I have been given glimpses into the beyond. I am humbled here. I can imagine that is a most humbling experience, and it is in every sense of the word, it is truly a calling. Arnold in PA just tuned in and found out about Scott, and he said, oh, my God, we will miss him. Yeah, we will. Yeah, we will. And so that's the program for this evening. Thank you to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. We always need more. Tell your friends and neighbors about the program. Encourage them to support it. Because that's how we make sure that this thing keeps going. Last Friday, we talked a little bit about me putting up a new GoFundMe just to fund health insurance and tying it to the idea of a horn-in next year. I'm going to try to work on that this coming weekend. Because I've got, especially in the last few days, I've got this real desire to have health insurance. So I'll let you know if I get that done. Thank you to our a la carte contributors this evening. Thanks for jumping in on Joey and the gang's Rush challenge. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time with the rest of this community, engaging in it in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Roger and to Steve. Was I in such a hurry that I neglected to... Yeah. Thank you so much. Now, Roger said earlier, better late than never, been braiding garlic. That sounds fun. I love garlic braids. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon. Head on .live. Help a Brother Deacon out, and please like and subscribe to the podcast. Hit the heart button at TuneIn Radio. Leave a comment for the algorithms. Tell your friends and neighbors what a profoundly different approach to media we have going on here, where the experts are experts in their own lives and display their expertise every day. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Billions and billions of hours served. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Wear your mask if you're in big gatherings or around the maggots. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you. Pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if a Florida woman comes quacking down the sidewalk at you, quacking about how, at the top of her lungs, how she's been silenced, avoid Casey DeClantis like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Miss you, Scott. Later.